Good morning, everyone. I'm Rich Newitter, medical device analyst here at Leerink Partners. And this morning, we're very fortunate to have with us ResMed and David Pendarvis, who's the Chief Administrative Officer and Chief Global Counsel, along with Agnes Lee, who is the Director of Investor Relations. I want to keep this interactive, please, so feel free to raise your hand if you have a question. We'll get a mic over to you very quickly. And maybe with that, we'll kick it off. David, I'd love to maybe just get maybe you can introduce yourself briefly, discuss your role in the organization, and maybe a good way to start this off, I figured, would be to, as you give me a quick overview to ResMed and where you see the outlook for the company, what would you say like the one or two more underappreciated aspects of the story are? Maybe you can, weave that in there as you go over the overview.
Sure. Thanks, Rich, and thanks to Leerink for having us here. We're happy to be here. Good to see everybody out here bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning. So I'll give you a little bit of short background on myself. I've been with the company for about 12, 13 years now. I started in late 2002. I came in and really from the word go have always been involved in speaking with shareholders and potential shareholders. So I've got a couple of different roles in the company, primarily on this side, the Chief Administrative Officer side, is dealing with investors and also dealing with a variety of things. I've run sort of training, HR, some other functions within the company over time. And then I've also got on the other side of the house, the legal side of the house. So I'm here today, not as a lawyer, but more as the Chief Administrative Officer. I've been fortunate enough to be with the company through a really heady growth phase. When I joined in 2002, I think we were about $200 million in sales, and now we're over $1.6 billion, so that's an 8X in 12 years. The company's market cap has increased significantly during that same time. But the company's mission really hasn't. We've really stayed very focused and primarily focused on treating, what we would call the scourge of sleep-disordered breathing that affects hundreds of millions of people. And still, when I began and still remains today, a very underappreciated, underdiagnosed, under-penetrated, and under-treated market. So while we've got a lot of other things that are going on, a lot of very exciting things, sort of the core mission of being involved in identifying, raising awareness of, and treating sleep-disordered breathing remains really the company's primary mission. And today, we're the market leaders in that space. We have operations throughout the world. Our revenue is split roughly half and half in the U.S. and outside of the U.S., with the major countries being the U.S., France, Germany, and Japan. So we have a global management team. We're spread throughout the world. The company was founded in Australia. We've got a very globalized manufacturing base and R&D base, and we're very focused on innovation and continuing to lead. So, Rich, you asked about sort of the one or two aspects of the company that I think are underappreciated. And so I'm going to assume a relatively in-depth knowledge from folks on the room or folks on the call. And so one of the things is that today, obviously, we're in a very strong product cycle. I don't think that's underappreciated. I think folks are very aware of the fact that we're in a very strong product cycle. We've released our new platform, which is the AirSense 10 platform of flow generators, and that has been very well received in the marketplace. So that, I think everyone knows. I think what perhaps is a little underappreciated is that it's not just kind of another product. So even sort of saying product cycle suggests, okay, well, when's your next movie going to be? When's the next product in this product cycle? And the AirSense 10 is in many ways a wonderful product. I mean, it treats patients well. It's got a great form factor. It's very quiet. The breathing patterns that it offers are very comfortable to breathe with. It's got a lot of patient-friendly features. But importantly, it is really a node in a network of data and data communication. And it's really that network effect and that system and that solution that we're offering, which in many ways is changing the basis of competition in the industry and really enabling a new basis for us to deliver high-quality therapy to patients and high quality services and solutions to the folks who are dealing with patients. And so by that, what I mean is, you know, devices for a long time have had the ability to get data and track data of what's going on throughout the night. This system, because it connects through a CDMA chip that is embedded in the device, is automatically sending that data out, downloading it into a server, and that server is then making that data available to either the providers, in the U.S. would be the durable medical equipment providers, to physicians, to the patient themselves through a smartphone application. And then ultimately, if they're interested in it, it can be made available to payers and others in the entire chain. It's seamlessly working with electronic medical record systems. We're integrated with Epic and other large systems. And so that network effect and that system effect is really going to change the basis on which these products and solutions are viewed. So it's almost like, if you think about, you know, the early sort of cellular phones, you know, okay, but this is great. It's lighter. It's not a brick. It's the buttons light up. It's easy to use. It's easy to push. It's got high quality. But then you go to smartphones, and the network effect of smartphones and their ability to work has really changed that industry. And so maybe it's not quite as revolutionary, but it's in that same direction. And what it's enabled us to do has been to not only say, okay, now what next five years from now when you drop another flow generator, how is that going to be different? How is that going to be better? Instead, what we can do is add features to that solution on a very regular basis so that we believe we're now well ahead of our competition today in providing the best solution for patients. But at the same time, we can make that better and better as we improve the offering through the solution and through the network. So I think that's the number one factor that's maybe underappreciated is the depth of that change and the opportunities that it presents for us. And then the second thing that I would suggest is probably still a little underappreciated is the long-term opportunities for us, right? So the long-term opportunities, we talk about horizons 1, 2, and 3 of our horizons of growth, and the long-term opportunities in heart failure in particular are something that really are underappreciated. You've got a huge percentage of patients who've got heart failure who have sleep disordered breathing at some level, and looking at our opportunities to bend the mortality curve, certainly bend the hospitalization curve, and create better outcomes both for patients who have cardiovascular disease and for the healthcare systems that are trying to treat them. Is really a long-term effort. So we're in that game for the long run. We've got a study we've been running for several years that should read out either later this year or early 2016. That study, we believe, should provide a lot of evidence that'll, A, provide opportunities for providers and cardiovascular specialists in particular to screen their patients, diagnose them if they have sleep disordered breathing, and then treat it, as well as for hospital systems and payers and others to recognize the cost savings that they get. So, you know, that's not a necessarily this year event or next year or even 2 years. You know, that is a long-term, you know, 5 to 7 year kind of opportunity for us to really build on. So those sort of long-term things that we have in Horizons 2 and Horizons 3, I think, are underappreciated.
Great. That's helpful. Since, you know, it sounds like this is right now, you know, there's some serious new product momentum, maybe not new product cycle momentum, but new products differentiation. Would love to know, can you talk a little bit about the sales trajectory for the AirSense 10 and maybe any other new products that you care to highlight?
Sure. So the AirSense 10, you know, was launched here in, say, August or so of this year in the U.S. It's now launched pretty much throughout the world. There's still a few pockets of areas where, for regulatory reasons, getting products approved, it's not available. But otherwise, that's available on both the underlying flow generator space in terms of our basic products that treat sleep apnea, as well as now in our bi-level area. So we've now launched the bi-level, which we call the Air Curve. So those are products that are not only treating sleep apnea, but they can treat patients who need assistance with the work of breathing on through to the product that we have that treats our adaptive servo-ventilation device or PaceWave device, which is treating a breathing condition that's frequently found with patients who have heart failure. So that entire range of products are out and are available now. And obviously, you know, we put up some pretty good numbers with those products. You know, we're up, our flow generators are up 25% year over year in the U.S. during the December quarter. So there's obviously really good patient acceptance and really good customer acceptance. And we think that that product has got a lot of room to run. So we're very pleased with how it's performing. The launch of the bi-levels only occurred sort of at the tail end of the December quarter, so that's still early on in the cycle. And as I indicated, this is not just going to be a product that is kind of out and then, you know, a year from now, okay, you're done, you're cycling your comps on that. We intend to keep building the solution, and we think that we should have some good performance with that product for a good long time, both in the U.S. as well as outside the U.S.
But again, the launch primarily was in the U.S.
The launch was worldwide. It was a worldwide launch. The launch for outside the U.S. was primarily built around the European Respiratory Society meeting, which would have been in, say, September of 2014. So it was a little bit staggered. But today that launch is out throughout the world. I would say that the product is probably fitting in comfortably within some of the existing patterns of customers in the U.S. who are more accustomed to getting data and meeting compliance reporting requirements through data and the cellular network. Those same opportunities are, you know, country by country different outside the U.S., but we're seeing good acceptance of that value proposition outside the U.S. The other product that I would that is a new product that I would highlight for you, Rich, is we have a life support ventilator, and that's called the Astral, and that was launched in the June quarter in Europe. And there the roles are somewhat reversed in that we've been selling life support ventilation products in Europe for some time, and so there it's comfortably fitting within the customer patterns and the customer knowledge and acceptance that we have in Europe. That product's doing very well outside the U.S. It has recently been launched in the U.S., and we're getting good customer acceptance in the U.S., but that is it's a new area for us in the U.S. We haven't had a life support ventilation product in the U.S. before. So it's a little bit more of a greenfield opportunity, which is great. It's also taking a little longer to get customer acceptance and to drive new relationships. So that's a little bit of a longer cycle, but we're very, very excited about the opportunities for that in the U.S., very excited about the opportunities for that outside the U.S. So that's another new product that is in a different category, treating different types of patients that should have a long way to go for us.
And what are your expectations for mask growth?
Mask growth is an area that's, you know, turned around a little bit for us in the last few quarters. You know, we haven't given guidance on, you know, specific targets for the growth of that area. But our range of products now, which is the AirFit, both in the sort of the three subcategories of masks, which would be the pillows space, the nasal space, and the full face space, all three of those products are doing very well. If you looked historically, you know, in the U.S., there was about a year ago a time when we had to make price adjustments in the market in response to competitive conditions. So we're about to cycle those comps as we get through the March quarter and then tailing off a little bit into the June quarter. So that makes the comparisons a little easier. It's a dynamic space out there, but we've got terrific products there as well as products in the pipeline. So we think that masks are the most important factor in compliance. Still, if you talk to patients and you say you're having trouble with therapy, why? The number one reason still always comes down to some issue with the mask. So we've got, you know, fantastic masks. We think they'll be continuing importance. Right now, the excitement's around, obviously, kind of the flow generators because those are the newer products. But obviously, we've got a full pipeline of masks to come in the future.
Just going back to that dynamic of cycling the price drops in the prior period, can you maybe just flesh out what from what you can, the market, you know, what's potentially market share versus health of the underlying kind of volume environment? Like, how do those moving pieces, how should we be thinking about those moving pieces as we anniversary?
Sure. So I think that the underlying space of in the U.S., which is where a lot of this dynamic is in play, has traditionally been that kind of mid-single digits kind of, you know, growth space, which is on a net basis. So you got volume, you know, less price. Where you're at now is we believe from a volume basis, you know, we're gaining share in masks. So, you know, we took about a year ago, both from a pricing perspective down, and we had some volume loss. We're getting back that volume now, so we're seeing good volume gains. And then the pricing on a year-over-year basis still is negative for us. But as we come through this particular cycle, you know, through the March quarter, and then as we get into the June quarter, that will start leveling out. So you should see the headwinds that we've been facing of pricing come off. So then if we're able to continue to maintain those share gains and you've got some fundamental gains in the markets, we should be able to show better results in terms of our mass growth.
Great. That's helpful. And then I just wanted to talk a little bit about the kind of the new products, how the mix, you know, what the impact from a mix shift maybe on the gross margin line, the trends in the most recent quarter, and I think you decreased your gross margin guidance on your last call. So can you talk about what's driving that decrease and the dynamics there?
Sure. So there's a number of factors that that go into our overall blended gross margins. The two primary ones being geographic mix and product mix, and so. You know, we took our gross margin, we had gross margin guidance from 61 to 63. We took that to 60 to 62, and that reflects both of those factors, both geographic mix and product mix. And the geographic mix is that you've got the U.S. outgrowing the rest of the world, both from a fundamental constant currency growth basis, as well as certainly when you throw currency into the mix, and we report in U.S. dollars, that has an impact. So whenever the U.S. is outgrowing the rest of the world, that's negative for the margin because the U.S. tends to have lower pricing and therefore lower margins than the rest of the world in our space in any event. And then the other product mix is masks versus flow generators. So masks traditionally have higher than our blended margins, and flow generators as a category tend to have lower gross margins. So when you're growing your flow generator category in the U.S., that's growing your lowest margin product, which will take all day long because it's better bottom line profit. But that does tend to have a bit of a headwind impact on your blended margins. I will say that's offset to a certain extent by the potential success of the Astral and the potential success of the bi-level range. So those are in the flow generator category. They're both, you know, more recent launches and not the volume deliverers of the underlying flow generator range, but they have higher margins. And so with the success of those products, that can ameliorate a bit of that margin decline.
Should there just be a natural kind of economies of scale, too, on these new products themselves? Are they launched with a lower margin today, and as volumes move higher, they'll naturally just get a lift?
Certainly. So there's two issues. One is the volume. There as the volumes increase, we have opportunities to get a lower cost of goods, and also just generally over time, once you've launched a new product, then you start your value engineering and you get more efficient in your manufacturing process. So over time, we would anticipate that we'd be able to do our normal sort of cost out process for those products, which should give us a benefit. Traditionally, what we've done is we've used those kinds of cost out programs to offset price declines in the industry, and they've been relatively parallel.
And you mentioned FX. Can you just remind us how FX impacts your top line and flows through?
Yeah, so in the remaining minute, 16 seconds, it's a little challenging to do that in detail. What I'll say is obviously we've got a percentage of sales, and it's on our website or on our investor presentation, that's in euros. So obviously that has an impact on the top line. We don't hedge that. But the SG&A is largely in range with the revenue split. So those things go in line. The main impact we get is as the Australian dollar weakens for us, that generally is strong for our cost of goods sold. So we get a benefit on the cost of goods sold. So at the moment, those things are kind of offsetting each other. The euro weakness is getting offset by the Australian dollar weakness. So it's generally neutral for us kind of as we sit here on the bottom line.
Okay. And maybe just before we wrap up, I'd love to just ask if you've heard anything new on Medicare competitive bidding round three or bundling.
So no new news on either of those fronts. It's what's out is known, and there's an expectation that they'll roll out an average of pricing in competitively bid markets on a blended basis. Whether they're going to continue to roll some kind of a pilot in bundling, we're waiting further word. So no new news on that front, Rich.
Okay. Well, David, Agnes, thank you very much. Please join me, everyone, in thanking both of you to join us.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate everybody's attention.